because of the mindfulness lessons, it helped them sleep better at night. If I can get one kid to sleep better at night, I got to commit the rest of my life to this. A percent said this should be taught to other kids. Another percent said help them feel more calm. Some of them said it helped them feel more focused and helped them on a test.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hello, 18 Summers Tribe. Jamie Shields here. Today, our interview is with Dr. J. That's what all of her students call her. She has been a teacher, a vice principal, and a principal. She has many lessons that she's gained in and out of the classroom, through parents, through mentors, on how to guide children with some of the most difficult behaviors toward being some of the most cooperative and positive functioning students. She now is an empowerment coach, and she really aids families in doing these processes at home. It was wonderful to talk to her. I think you'll gain a lot of insights and a lot of fun ways to pull in affirmations for our children, to change our verbiage just slightly into a positive verbiage. Instead of difficult behavior, it's unexpected behavior. That was my biggest takeaway. Sometimes a single word can make such a huge difference. I'd really like for you to listen to this interview today with Karen, also known as Dr. J. We had a great time, and I hope you do too. Welcome, Karen. How are you today?
Doing good. I'm here still at school, but it's been a wild and crazy day, as these days are with COVID, but I'm excited to be here, and these tend to be the highlights of my day. So thanks for this opportunity.
Oh, wonderful. We're so glad you're here. Let's get right into it. I know that you've had quite a journey from teacher to vice principal to principal. And through these different roles in your life, you started to see some commonalities, some things that were challenging, some places where you just knew that you could help. How did you find yourself on this path?
So I absolutely love kids, which is why I became a teacher. And I had so many positive influences in my life growing up. Like it really, like they say, took a village. We were very involved in the church when I grew up. So a lot of people within the church, it had its own church school. And so my teachers, the church members, families, connected with families, I just had a lot of different people who were like mentors to me that really helped influence and shape I know a lot of who I am today. And when I was thinking after high school, like, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? I had worked in a business office in a hotel, and I plugged away at a computer for hours a day. And I was like, wait, do this for the rest of my life? For what? For what company? To look back and say, well, what did I do for anything? Like, what's that really going to matter to? And someone asked me to volunteer in our church school in a first grade math class of all things, like once or something a week. Like it was something really little. I didn't even know what I was doing, but I just jumped in. And one day the teacher was like, you know, you're really good with kids. And I was like, I am, because I'm just doing what I do. I don't really know a difference. And the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? I want to be able to give to kids what someone gave to me. And so I really saw myself as, like, I never really thought of myself as a good teacher, even though I went to school to be a teacher, but instructionally wise, like with content and things like that, I never felt like I was like the master of that. What I was the master of was encouraging a kid, like to help them to be something better than what they were today. And then as I was a teacher, I had some really challenging kids over the years, and I couldn't figure out how to reach them. Like some of them just couldn't do school. Like they were creative, but they couldn't sit down and do the pencil to paper task. And so I'd have lunch with them to figure out what I could do to connect with them, to help them get them through, like, just do what I need you to do. I had a kid like hide in the coat, little cubby, and not come out. And I couldn't figure out why. And when I couldn't get to those root issues, like it really like bothered me. And so then I went for my educational doctorate degree in educational leadership and saw principals and supervisors around me as a teacher that kind of didn't really have that much respect for. And I was like, what's the difference between you and me? Just your training. So I actually went to school to try to become a leader in a school that really emulated, like, a place where kids love coming, where people love coming, where we treat each other with respect and create that. And I'm a very positive person. So it kind of emulates, like, whatever that principle is, it ebbs and flows throughout the whole entire culture of the school. And so it wasn't until 12 years ago that I sat in a day training with a doctor from Harvard with school districts represented here in Delaware. And he talked about a collaborative problem-solving process and how you get a kid to really talk about why they really did what they did. And then you collaboratively problem solve the problem because it's either a skill to be taught or a problem to be solved. And then he walked us through what you do in each of those situations. And his whole heart and theme behind it was kids do well if they can. And if they can't, it's up to us to figure out why. And I was like, yes, I do believe that. No matter how bad a kid does something wrong, bad, meltdown, get suspended, whatever, they really want to do well. And that premise to me was huge. And it just synced inside me with how I believe, what I believe about kids. So I started practicing because I was a child study team facilitator in two schools. So I started practicing what he was saying and I failed forward because like anything doesn't happen at first and you got to learn it. You got to like practice till, you know, you get more comfortable with it and everything like that. And then I started seeing like coming up with problems, solutions with kids that were working. And the connection I had with them was so positive because it's a very collaborative approach. It's not a punitive one way. You're wrong. This is what you need to do. Why aren't you changing it? Goodbye. And then I became an assistant principal and I used it in every situation where a kid was written up and sent to the principal's office, you know? And then I ended up having lunch with the kids that were written up the most once a week because I needed them to trust me when I disciplined them. And those were, might've been the only fun things they did during that week because they were always in trouble. And then kids know that. And then they build a complex and then they don't want to come to school and they hate school. And I didn't think it should be that way because I was bad as a kid. I lied. I stole. I cheated. Nobody believes this. It's hysterical. Like simple, stupid things, but still. And I knew what it was like to feel bad. And I always made that distinction with kids. You're not bad. You're not wrong. What you did is unexpected. There is a consequence, but I never treat a kid looking down on them, making them feel worse than they really. I don't believe that's my space or my right because I knew what that was like as a kid. And so fast forward, being a principal, then I keep that process in place. Gosh, I used it today with a kid who unfortunately hit a teacher. He said no, and he just in first grade, and that's just what his impulse was. And I use the same process, gosh, to this day. And now it's something I actually teach parents because I think if I learned it and parents might feel stuck at times, and maybe can help them because it really opened up for me. I can get kids to admit to things because of this process. And it's really powerful. And it keeps the connection and the relationship open, which I think is so huge because a lot of times the relationship is broken when a kid does something wrong or bad because they know it and we may get frustrated, you know, et cetera. So I think that answered your question. That was kind of a long answer.
I think actually, as you were giving some explanation, some context to your path, I noticed a lot of verbiage that you use that may be different from what parents or educators typically use. Words like unexpected behavior instead of bad or negative behavior, you know, teaching skills or solving a problem, you know, certain just very proactive language and not shame-based language. Is that, what would you say? What would you call that? That's just what I would call it. But do you have a frame for that like slant on your verbiage? Because it's very powerful.
It's things I've picked up along the way. So I've learned expected, unexpected from someone along the way. And it just rang true with me because we say you misbehaved. Well, they don't know what that means. Like, what does that really mean? Behave. Okay. What is that? But wow, what you just did, that was a little unexpected. They're like, yeah. Right. Like, so I've started teaching parents that and they seem to like that. And I use that with the kids and it's a very like positive, like it's a positive tone. It's a positive, it just comes from the base of just, I don't know. You don't talk demeanly to the kid. And like I teach parents and I use it. It's called the elevator tone of voice. Mm-hmm. I heard you just hit your teacher. Like, what's up with that? That's literally how I talk to the kid that just got in trouble. Where usually the teachers, if the kid on the playground kicks someone, they bring him to the office. You sit down. You're going to talk to the principal. Da 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 da, you know? And I come out and if they're snotting and crying and all that, I don't talk to them yet. And I teach this to parents, you're not going to talk to them until they're calm and in control of their body because no one is ready to talk when they're upset. When I'm freaked out and upset and someone's yelling at me, I couldn't even tell you my name. Like you literally, your brain shuts down. Like we got to learn that. We got to teach people that. And so I wait till they're calm and I use that. Oh, you don't look like you're calm and in control of your body. We're going to give it some time. Sometimes I set a timer for them to see it. But I let them calm down because you can't make a kid calm down any faster than they're going to calm down. And that's really hard for us sometimes. Sometimes we have the time for it. And I understand sometimes you don't always have that time. But this is what I teach so that when you can, this is the process we're going to use. And only when they're calm and in control of their body, and only when I'm calm and in control of my body. So I teach parents, like, you do, go do some breaths. I don't know what to say. Tell your child what you did really upset and bothered me. And I don't know what I'm going to do right now, but we'll talk about it later. But you still keep that positive tone. Notice I didn't bring a slant to it. No judgment. I'm not talking down to it. It's that, I call it that elevator tone of voice. Like, you get on the elevator with someone you don't know. Hey, how are you? Hey, great. Have a good day. That's how I always talk to kids when they're in trouble. And slowly over time, they realize that they're not going to get yelled at, talked down to. And then what I have to say, like this infamous question that we learned from this Dr. Ablon, what's up with that? And they just stare at you and look at you. And you got to wait that impregnable pause. That's so hard for all of us. That's why you practice it. I like that. And they just look at you usually and they're like, shrug their shoulders. Or they say, I don't know, because they never know. And then you ask this really creative question. Well, if you did know, what would you say? Two heads, because nobody talks to them like that, right? And sometimes they still stare at you.
With you being in the trenches, you're seeing this all the time. And is there a common theme? Everyone's kind of looking for an answer to all this. Like, is there really an answer? Is it, oh, it's more ADD, or it's just pure anxiety? That's just from what they're being exposed to. Is there kind of a main underlying theme that's causing a lot of the behaviors that you see as a collective?
I think that there's a couple of things. I think sometimes we forget that kids are kids and like they're not robots and they don't know everything perfectly. And I think sometimes when a kid just does something wrong, like they just did something wrong. Like, they're not perfect. But yet sometimes as a parent, right, we're like, how could you do that? I taught you better. So we kind of get upset. And sometimes I'm just like, okay, maybe they knew better. And yes, parent, yes, you taught them, but they aren't a robot and they're going to do something wrong. Like, they're human, right? So I really just, at times, to me, it's just, they need to be taught something. It's either the skill, right, that we assume they know by now, but that showed us they didn't. So maybe we have to go back to that. Or it's a problem to be solved that we do this collaborative little steps with. So they get the buy-in, actually teaches the kid to problem solve, which is a 21st century skill. What parent doesn't want their kid to learn problem solving skills? And that's what's so beautiful about this process. It's right in there. And that's why they say they don't know, because they're not used to problem solving. They're used to someone telling them everything they should and shouldn't do, actually. So there's so much built into that, but let's go back to your question. So some of the time I think it's a kid just being a kid, and it's part of life that we have to teach them. Like, you got to teach the toddler to walk and you don't get upset when they keep falling down. So you just hit the kid on the playground. Like, you know, okay, let's talk about, like, how did they make you feel? How do you think that made them feel? So you're teaching them that perspective taking. So there's things that are part of just raising kids that you're going to teach them that I think is there. The second thing I think we're also seeing is how many more parents, both parents, are working, and maybe one isn't as present, like a homemaker, like years ago. Like, when I grew up, my mom stayed home with us, raised us. She was always there. So now if you have two parents working, very stressful jobs, pre-COVID, more stressful post-COVID, they're dealing with so much stress that how much energy do they really have at the end of the day to really be present for their kids and give? And it takes a lot of giving and give some more and keep that. Even controlling your voice when you're emotionally, like, drained and tired and hungry and et cetera, but you got to give, right? Especially as the mom, you're doing 101 things. Not that the dad isn't, but so I think kids, and then now kids are more on devices. So
yeah,
when you're on devices yeah. And you may not have present parents as much, who's teaching them? And they're losing that opportunity to play, argue, fight, get upset. This is how you problem solve, perspective take, all those things that some of us just naturally picked up growing up. It feels like the kids are coming home to school with less and less of these social skills. So could be, I think, some of those factors. And then you have all that going on pre-COVID, and now you have COVID. And now we've seen a rise of kids having self-injury and self-harm, saying things, searching on the internet more than we've ever seen it before. It's, you know, a lot of what we call, like, the mental health crisis. Well, I felt like we had a mental health crisis before COVID, which I was waiting for the whole state to come in and do something and give us more supports. And I wasn't seeing that happen. And then there was a mindfulness coach at a nearby school that my school counselor told me about. So we piloted them with my first grade class. And then the next year we brought them to all the kids. And then it was part of a curriculum that I ended up learning myself to teach. And so, which is where I came in with with one of the picture books that we can touch on in a minute with the kids with positive affirmations. And so the mindfulness for the practices for these kids, to me, I mean, she did a pre and post survey, second through fifth graders, 40% of them said because of the mindfulness lessons, it helped them sleep better at night. If I can get one kid to sleep better at night, I got to commit the rest of my life to this. A percent said this should be taught to other kids. Another percent said help them feel more calm. Some of them said it helped them feel more focused and help them on a test. Like, I was like, get out. This data is incredible. This is the proactive approach. This is what I've been asking for something to happen, but it's right here. And so I learned a couple of courses, took two classes with Mindful Schools, learned the lessons, have made some videos, do some of the work with the kids still. Even I'm going to try to start an after school class with kids virtually to do it. Like, kids need this. It's helped me. It's the number one thing that helps me stay sane and do my job with all the crazy in the head that I can't calm myself down at the end of a stressful day with. The mindfulness and meditation practices that I've taken on for myself have been my number one thing that has really gotten me through. Yeah.
So how do you start teaching mindfulness to children? I know it's important to start with the parents, like you're saying. I know that you guide parents through it because, you know, I mean, you even said it a minute ago, do the best you can when you can. Talk in your elevator voice when you can. When you're not losing your shit, talk in your elevator voice, right? Like, because sometimes we aren't our best selves. And so I appreciate that you said, you know, when you can, do this. And so I think, you know, for our parents listening, I think it's good to start with their own practice, right, of mindfulness and model that. But then how can we guide that into our children? How do you guide parents into guiding their children?
So one simple thing, because I could go on and on and on about this. And if you look me up and follow me, I'm running another live course where I taught parents this in November, and they did it and they tried it. It was incredible. So first, I'll teach the parents a couple breathing strategies. Like, one of them is a ball breath where you put your fingers together like this, and we teach the kids this. So as a parent, we'll teach you, because then you can teach your kid and then you can practice together. So if you put your fingers together, fingertips together, and just stretch out, makes like a ball with your fingers, if you're listening, try to explain it. I'm not doing such a great job. And then if you breathe in, expanding your fingers out. And then as you breathe out, you just bring your fingers back. So it's called a ball breath. So we teach kids this breathing activity, which they can do anytime, which is fun because your hands are always with you, right? And then there's the finger breath. That's my favorite because I think it forces me to do five breaths, and it's just spreading one hand out, taking one finger and just tracing the outer edge of your finger, starting with your thumb. And as you go up to the top of the finger, you're breathing in. And as you go down, you're breathing out. As you go to the next finger, following it up, you're just tracing it. And you go down, you breathe out. It really helps me do five breaths. So I teach parents those two simple activities, and I challenge them to practice it themselves, teach it to their kids, and then use it on your own. Kids see you using it, they realize how normal it is. So one parent needed a moment. Her son did something. He's in second grade. She was like, oh my gosh. She went in the dining room, sat down, started doing whichever one, I'll say ball breath or finger breath, I don't remember which one. Out of her corner, I saw her son come around the corner. He looked at her. He turned around and he left her alone. And she was like, oh my gosh. He realized I needed a moment. So now you're teaching your kids to stop, take a moment. I need to breathe. When I'm calm and in control of the body, we'll talk. When you're calm and in control, and if you can create that normalcy, I'll need a moment sometimes. Gosh, darn it, right? So those are a little simple practice you can try.
That's great. And along those same lines, I know you're big into affirmations. Can you share some great ideas for, you know, I know us adults can come up with things, or even that old Saturday Night Live skit, I am beautiful and people like me, gosh darn it, or whatever it is. But how do we get started with affirmations for our children?
So one of my paraprofessionals gave me a CD called 101 Positive Affirmations by Louise Hay. And I didn't know anything about her, Louise Hay, and I stuck it in one day. And she literally is saying these positive things, all different things. And I would listen to it on my way to work and on my way home. And all of a sudden, I realized all the thoughts in my head, which are usually the problems, the teacher said that, are they upset, this kid, this problem, can't solve that. Just all those thoughts were just lifting. When I would listen to this, and I was like, I gotta listen to this. It helps me get through my day, helps me start my day, helps me depress. Can't think of the word on the way home. Thank you. and then she shared with me this picture book, I Think I Am by Louise Hay. And it takes a very normal situation in a kid's life. For example, if it seems easier to sit back and watch than to help, you might think, I wish someone else would help him on that pony. I don't need to help him. Why don't you change your thoughts and say, I happily help wherever I can. So it took a very simple scenario, like, I always forget something. Oh my gosh, I left my sweater on the bench. I always forget everything. No, wait, I believe the best in myself. And so I just absolutely loved this book. So I did a read aloud and asked the teachers to invite me in, would read aloud. One day when I was in a fourth grade class, one of the students said, Dr. J, you should read one of those on the announcements every day. I was like, that is the best idea, especially because it came from a kid. So I started for a whole year, literally just reading one of these on the announcements and had the kids repeat it after me. Well, then that was right before we brought the mindfulness coach in. And you asked how we teach mindfulness in that program from Mindful Schools. You're using your senses. So first you're just going to say, kids, let's just stop for a moment and be quiet. Just listen to what you hear in the room. What comes, let it go, but we're just going to listen. And then she brings a chime and she'll ring it. And then you just breathe quietly and she'll say, you know, sit with your backs up tall like a tree. Just rest your hands gently in your lap. Let your eyes close or look down at the floor because some kids, it's not comfortable. So you give them that opportunity. And then she just rings her chime and she just encourages them. We're all going to breathe. And she'll just start for as long as she can keep them quiet. Like if it's like 32 seconds, because then you get the little noises going and she stops there. And each week you build it up. I'm not kidding you. Classes were doing like 2.5 minutes. I was blown away of complete silence. That's all you're doing. You're not telling them to look or think of anything. It's not a Buddhist thing. You're not humming. You're not sitting. I mean, people have 101 ideas of what it could look like. So I started my YouTube channel, Mindfulness with Dr. J, to try to show parents what we're doing. Cause I'm like, say, you know, mindfulness, there's everyone that's such a buzzword and you're like, so cool. But like, what exactly are you really doing? And I had a fifth grade student who was one of our challenging behavior kids, but was good at technology. And I always spin it to find what you're good at and help show you that. And he created a YouTube channel, which I had no idea what I was doing, but of course they all do. He started video. Like, it was so cool. It was so cool. And this kid loved coming to school. Like, yeah, you got to do everything else you got to do. But he was doing all this stuff to the point where kids were like, hey, tech guy, da 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 da. And before, he was just known as like in trouble kid, right? Because he's just smart. And he just smart for all schools so easily. So that, I lost my train of thought, but that was a lot to answer your question.
As you were talking, it reminded me of our good friend, Dave Rendell. He wrote a book called Freak Factor. I don't know if you've heard it. It's essentially about flipping your flaws. So just the idea that all of our flaws have a really positive, total opposite end. So one of Jim's things, he's like super passionate. I'm just using you as an example.
Sure, go ahead.
sometimes you're a naughty little boy too.
Of course.
So he's super passionate. But like sometimes passionate comes out in like, he's super passionate about something that he's upset about at work. And I'm like, whoa. And he's like, hon, I'm passionate. Like I take this passion wherever I go. But it was something for me to learn, like, oh, I want him to be passionate, you know, in dating me. And I want him to be passionate playing with our kids, but somehow I wanted to like bypass the passionate when you're talking to me about work. And that doesn't go that way. And so really Dave's book talks about seeing the good in all of these things, that there's really that other side, that if you take a moment, you can really flaunt your flaws.
I think a great kid example, he said, he's now a professional speaker. And he said, I used to get in trouble for talking too much. And now I get paid for talking.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I was tall and skinny and gawky. So I got made fun of and I was super hyperactive. So I couldn't sit still. So he got a basketball scholarship to college. And then he went on to run ultra marathons because he was so
active,
wiry and hyperactive. So when you think about it, you're like, oh, wow, that is true. Okay. You know, something he would get made fun of or get in trouble for actually propelled his career, his relationships, his purpose, which that's always a good way to look at it, I think.
And it probably started with an educator or a parent that showed him something.
Yeah, because on how you look at it, you can either see all the things they're doing wrong. And it's funny because every time there's like a kid with challenging behaviors, I'm always like, I can't wait to see who they're going to be one day. Because I know they're going to be something incredible, amazing. And they all end up doing well. Like, come on, guys. But we can get so stuck in the moment and be like, I can't believe they X, Y, and Z. It couldn't be more true. And that's what I love. I also love the book Leader in Me by thinking of a different, but Leader in Me. So schools become leader in, what is it? Yeah. So leader. Yeah, find it. And so now schools are Leader in Me schools. And the whole premise is, it's the guy who wrote five skills of a teenager. Okay. Whatever. When you see it, you're going to be like, oh yeah. Well, the Leader in Me. So I read that book and it's so synced with my philosophy of kids and believing them, because you take kids who are struggling and you find their skills that they're good at. And you teach kids, each one of us is a leader. Someone is always watching you. I don't care who you are, what age you are, someone's always watching you. And are you going to lead in the right way, choosing something good? And that's what I teach kids and say to kids here at school, you know. And that's a lot of the work that I did. I took kids, I found what they were good at, and I gave them opportunities to do something that they were good at to shine, because they weren't shining, it's that they just showed up to do. That's just the traditional stuff. Yeah.
Well, I know that I could continue talking about this for quite some time, but I know you're ending a long day, and I want to make sure we get to our finale question. And then after that, I want to make sure people know how to reach you. But one thing that we learned when this crazy pandemic started is when we were getting into more interviews and things we were working on with our family and ourselves, we've all been told the question of, well, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? And I think that gives good reflection and good insight and is something to do. But we needed a little more wisdom in the opposite direction. So Jamie and I actually, when the pandemic started with different businesses, everyone coming home and that, we kept asking ourselves was, what would our 75-year-old self say to us today? What would be the advice that older, wiser self would maybe be giving us right now? And when we sat and thought about that, you know, and slightly meditative, we're like, yeah, that's what they would say. Like, this is the good stuff. Enjoy this. Soak it up. You're getting more time at home. More, you'll get through this. Just insights came up. So we started to ask all our guests, and it's now kind of become a tradition. And especially with your path, you know, I'm anxious to ask you, what do you think, you know, we're going years down the road, what advice do you think your 75-year-old self would give to you, to us, to your kids? What do you think that would be?
So that is such a great question. And as you're even asking it, I'm like about to tear up, because
it happens.
That's really, I'll say for myself first, because I'm visualizing myself and what I would say to myself. And it makes me tear up, because I could hear myself say, everything you believed is the truth, and kids need that. And it makes me cry, because it's not always openly well received where I am with what I'm doing, but I so believe it at my core, and I have seen it change kids and have them do a complete 180. I have seen parents just get so much hope from it, just from starting teaching parents last year, seeing them implement the things and come back and tell their stories of how it's changing and improving their life. It's, I could hear my 7-year-old self saying, it's worth it. Keep the path. People need this. It's just one at a time that I'm helping. Just keep doing it. Don't listen to the other things and just let go of the negativity and the naysayers and the things that they want to take you down. And it's funny, because this saying in my life that I've shared is, be like a cork in the ocean. No matter how far down you go, you're going to come back up to the top. What thoughts or how low it gets in life, you like that quirk, you're going to pop back to the top. And it just inspires me to keep going and share the work and keep reaching out and keep sharing, keep loving on these kids. What I share is just something that I just so believe in to my core. And so maybe what my 7-year-old self would say, you know, to others right now who are listening, would just be, don't be so hard on yourself. You are doing the best you can with what you know today. So just take one little thing that I might say, or one little thing you might read, or one little thing you might come across tomorrow. Just take one little thing at a time. It's sometimes we get overwhelmed because, oh my God, there's so much that I need to do or change or be or da 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 da. Just stop and just be grateful for where you're at today, and know that you are amazing, and we appreciate you, and know that you are all the best that you know today. And tomorrow, little steps. Oh, I'm going to adapt that. And over time, you'll start changing and looking back and being like, oh my gosh, look at where I became or grew or
love it.
Yeah.
So thanks. Thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks for asking that question. Yeah. Tear up.
Yeah, no, it's great. It is a thought provoker for sure.
It is.
So where can our listeners learn more about you?
So I have a website, educationalimpactacademy.com. I know that's a mouthful, but I know you'll put in the show notes. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Karen Jakubowski. I have my own podcast called Momnificent, and it's an interview guesting podcast. So I bring on guests from all walks of life, across all fields, to just help moms and those who work with kids to just learn and be inspired, and be inspired for the work that you're doing also yourself. And so you can follow me on the Apple Podcasts as well. And I have, like I said, a course coming up that I just ran that parents are asking me to run again. It's live, so it's kind of fun. People like live. It's just an hour a night for 6 weeks. Then I'm starting some mindfulness classes for kids virtually. And then I recorded my course. So if you just want to like press it and listen to it on the go, because you do it on your own time, which is kind of how I learn, that's available on my website as well. So, and I'll send you guys the link, so it's easy to access.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you so much for being here. It was great chatting.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.